going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Let's talk to the senior national reporter for NFL Network, Steve Weiss, friend of the show. Covered our Atlanta Falcons years ago and knows everybody around the league. Steve, thanks so much for joining us, as always. Mike and I are still trying to figure out where this Aaron Rodgers thing is going to go. And I said to Mike earlier, I said, do you think Steve knows anything? Do you know anything new? This is just kind of a wait and see, and he's you know, dropping clues and hints, but he's not doing anything.
Yeah, I don't know anything new. I think it is an assumption just based on the Steelers not doing anything and Rodgers not saying anything that it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. But look, it's not done until it's done. So I think there's still that little bit of it's Aaron Rodgers. He's a wild card. But again, I think there's a feeling around the league, and especially around folks close to the situation, who think he's going to end up there.
Because, as you know, Steve, our only lifeline to get Cousins off the roster and make anything back on it, albeit maybe $5 million, would be if Pittsburgh couldn't consummate a deal with Aaron Rodgers. You still think there's any shot of Minnesota for Rodgers, or is that done?
I don't think the Minnesota thing is going to happen. I got to excuse you for just a second for this background noise. I don't think anything with Minnesota is going to happen, but I do think that should this Rodgers thing fall through, that the Steelers and Cousins, you'll hear some conversations there. It's interesting, and I know we've spoken about it on the show, how it seemed like there would be a trade market for Cousins. That clearly has kind of slowed for now, but I still think something will play out in that regard at some point. There'll be an injury or something that'll happen that'll eventually move that situation forward.
Steve Weiss, our guest, senior national reporter for NFL Network. All right, so we were talking about this earlier, Steve, as well. The Browns apparently, OTAs, everybody's in OTAs. They're putting out stats for their quarterbacks to let their fans know how Flacco and Shedeur Sanders, et cetera, are doing. What do you make of this situation? How do you see it playing out? Flacco's the starter until when?
Well, first off, the Browns didn't put that out. A local radio station put that part out.
Okay, okay.
So, but still, it's ridiculous.
It is.
I mean, the thing is, it is what it is. It's ridiculous. But I think car wash, too. So if it sounds like I'm in a tornado, that's what's going on. I'm giving you guys life in real time. I'm on my way to work, but my car is a disaster, so I've got to get cleaned up.
Right.
But look, I think it's think if they do it right, it's a fair competition. Look, Joe Flacco is familiar with the coaching staff. He saved their season and got them to the playoffs a couple years ago, and they frankly should have signed him last year. He was too popular, and they didn't want to create some type of odd dynamic in that room with Deshaun Watson still on the roster. So, you know, look, I think he goes in as the favorite. We'll see how Kenny Pickett does, and we'll see how the two rookies do. It really is going to be intriguing to me the amount of reps that these young quarterbacks get. And you would think Dillon Gabriel, being a third-round draft pick, will get the majority of the reps between those two. So it's going to have to be up to Shador to really stay after practice reps and do something with the quarterback coach to get himself ready if he's not getting the necessary reps to show what he can do.
It's our man Steve Weiss. He loves L.A., Carl. Santa Monica Boulevard. Steve loves it. He's with us on the waitfor.com hotline.
Hey, I'm on Crenshaw Boulevard. So.
All right.
Steve, what do you make of T.J. Watt? There's a couple guys doing the holdout thing. Now with the CBA, you lose that money. So where's this going to go with the Steelers and him?
Well, he loses that money if he doesn't do it, if he misses out on anything mandatory. But so what the guys are doing now are the hold-in type of things. They're showing up. So that he technically did a report. I think they'll eventually get something done with him. We'll see where it goes because he's seen where the numbers are. And I think that's why there's kind of a waiting game with Micah Parsons, with him, you know, to see who's got the money. Of course, T.J. Watt, does he want a longer-term deal, a shorter-term deal? We'll see. I think, again, they eventually get that done. He is part of the fabric of that organization, of that city. And the one thing the Steelers do, we've seen it with Cam Hayward and guys like that, is they take care of the guys who really identify with the city and with that organization. So I think that gets done before the season starts.
Steve, the NFL lost Jim Irsay, owner of the Colts. The succession plan, we always talk about this when situations play out. Do you know if his daughters are going to take over? Has anything been said about how this may look for the Colts moving forward?
Yeah, his daughters will take over, and the oldest daughter, Caitlin, who has represented the Colts multiple times at these owners' meetings and other league functions. She represented the club when he was suspended a couple years ago. She will be the lead person, but the daughters will absolutely take over the organization. They've been very involved for almost two decades, to be honest. They got partnership stakes. I think in 06, somewhere before 2010. So, yeah, that's been well set in motion. And, again, his eldest daughter has been involved in a lot of these league meetings, club meetings, so she understands the process. And you see that a lot with a lot of these organizations. Arthur Blank's son has been involved, you know, in a lot of these similar types of situations as well. So this is nothing new, but it will be his daughter's.
Gotcha. They honored him at the Indy 500, by the way, Carl. Jim Irsay, when I was up there. Steve Weiss is with us, guys, talking NFL as we're going around the league. We play the Dolphins this year here in Atlanta. Tariq Hill says he doesn't believe he deserves to be a team captain. Okay, there's some humility. Is that team ever going to win a playoff game as it's presently constructed?
Wow, that's an interesting question because – you know, a couple years ago, you know, Mike McDaniels comes down there. He's got all this panache, all this pizzazz, and everybody loves it. And now it seems to kind of run its course. But I do think, you know, they've got some coaching staff stability down there in terms of, you know, Anthony Weaver's coming back for his second year as defensive coordinator. He's well-regarded. You know, they've been really just decimated by injuries. I mean, look at the pass rushers. Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips and everyone they bring in there to edge gets hurt. They have injuries at all these key positions. So it's hard to tell. You know, I think if they stay injury free, they're a playoff team. But whether it's Tua, whether it's Tyreek, whether it's Jalen Waddle, last year their whole offensive line, Teron Arms, like wiped out. So it's just such an intriguing notion with them. I mean, it looks like they're going to trade Jalen Ramsey, but there's still a lot of talent on that team. But you have to also say to yourself, man, the Patriots getting Vrabel, some of the moves they made, they're right. Going to be a much tougher out than they've been. And frankly, in that division, if you look at the talent on the Jets, the talent is there.
The talent is there for them to be a playoff team at almost every level, every position. So the Miami's just an intriguing unknown, let's say, heading into the season.
Senior national reporter Steve Weiss here with us on Dukes and Bell. Steve, what about the buzz around Michael Penix? You've been around the league. People talking? I mean, it's real, yep. Right? It's real.
Yep, yep. No. People understand. You know, they see the arm talent, right? They see the ability. Now it's just a matter of executing. You know, can he handle a heavy load if he's got to come back because the defense is poor like it was last year? How will he be if he's playing with a lead when they could run the football? But trust me, people are like, yeah, this dude, we want to see what happens in game situations. But we saw it in college where he played in a ton of big games, right, and he won them. So can it translate? I think people are very eager to see. I mean, the book hasn't been written, but they're eager to see, like, does the arm talent, everything we saw in the few games last year and at the University of Washington and at Indiana, will it translate? And right now, I don't think anybody's looking at it with a lot of question marks.
We were talking earlier, Steve Weiss from NFL Network joins us, guys, a Prey car wash, that we were going to see Caleb Williams really take a leap this year because they finally got the right guy. Ben Johnson's got that thing built right. They've made the good additions. And then that comment comes out in the Wickersham book that his dad was kind of like, meh, and the whole team was meh about going to Chicago. Is this guy going to take the leap and be the guy we always thought he was going to be?
He's incredibly talented. I think he's a very humble young man. They went out and they got the pieces in the offensive line to protect him. The offensive line was horrible last year. His whole circumstance is horrible, right? This was like when Trevor Lawrence went to Jacksonville with Urban Meyer. Like, it's almost like last year you have to count as a redshirt year. So we'll see. There are players around him. I was with Ryan Poles, about 2 weeks ago, their GM. If you're real confident about this offensive line, now, once again, it's a matter of going out and executing. With Ben Johnson, an incredible offensive mind, but now he's the head man. And when you become the head man, you do less coaching and more managing. So we'll see how that works with him, too, because he's going to have a learning curve. But I do think that Caleb Williams has a better shot to succeed, and the Bears have a better opportunity to be better, even though top to bottom, that could be the most challenging division in the NFL.
Steve, who's going to make a move, if they will, for Trey Hendrickson? Apparently he's dug in. Right. The Bengals are dug in. I don't think they're going to pay him. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody else will right now unless there's an injury. He's a hell of a player, man. Mm. I mean, it's crazy. When we talk about great defensive players, ever since his last year in New Orleans, he has delivered with such consistency.
Yep.
And he's like such a humble dude. But, you know, you see the team's point of view. Yeah, you got 17.5 sacks last year, and what, we won 4 or 5 games, scoring 40 points a game. But at the same time, if he goes somewhere, he's the type of piece that could put somebody over the top. I mean, think the Falcons, he couldn't help them.
Mm.
So I don't think anyone's going to make a move for him right now. But if it does get ugly, maybe someone steps up. The thing is, this is like the wrong organization.
Yes.
Because remember, Carson Palmer went, he said, you know what, I'm just going to retire.
They're so cheap.
And then he went through similar situations and said, I'm just going to retire. And he did. They fortunately had drafted Andy Dalton. But it just turns out the Raiders had a season-ending injury to Jason Campbell. Former Bengals assistant Hugh Jackson was their coach, and he gave up the farm to get Carson Palmer. So they eventually moved him halfway through the season. But this could be an ugly stare down because we know the Bengals. They have a history of staring down their players like this. So, again, another intriguing storyline as we go into camp because that Bengals team, we know offensively, they've got enough to win it all. But defensively, they've got enough to win 6 games.
Right on. Remember, Carl, they used to charge guys for their TVs at their camps?
Yeah.
You know, hey man, I hope your whip looks good, Steve.
Hey, it's clean now. I'm driving down Crenshaw looking good.
Hi. Hey, man.
Headed into the studio with a smile on my face, bro.
Well, we'll be watching, man. As always, we appreciate you, brother. Senior national reporter Steve Weiss, friend of the show. Thanks so much, Steve.
Appreciate you guys.
Attention, sports enthusiasts. Keep the adrenaline pumping and elevate your game day with Chumba Casino. It's completely free to play. No purchase necessary. Whether you're cheering from the stands, on the move, or relaxing at home, Chumba Casino brings the thrill of social casino directly to your fingertips. Experience the ultimate social casino adventure with reels of casino-style games offering hundreds of exciting options to choose from and fresh new releases every week. There's always something new and thrilling to explore. From action-packed social slots and classic blackjack to engaging bingo and solitaire, the fun never stops. Plus, enjoy generous daily login bonuses and a fantastic free welcome bonus to kickstart your social gaming journey. Dive into the excitement. Discover a world where you can play for your chance to redeem some serious prizes and have a blast along the way. Don't miss out. What are you waiting for? Join now and immerse yourself in nonstop fun and adventure with Chumba Casino. Get in on the action today at ChumbaCasino.com and make every day a Chumba day. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus TNC supply.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Yeah, man. 3-day weekend.
Yeah, man.
We all just had a 3-day weekend. And it was fun. 20 minutes from now, we're going to get to an AMA. Any question, any topic, phone lines will be open. 404-726-0929. Be sure to get your questions ready. You can also text us or tweet us. Tuesdays at this time on this show for years now, Brandon Adams has joined us, host of the Dog Nation Daily Podcast, and we've always enjoyed it. We've always enjoyed talking to BA, but for the first time ever in our conversation with BA, he's in studio. So we welcome to the Kia Studios, Brandon Adams.
What up, B?
We are face-to-face talking in person. What a difference that makes.
It really does. And, I mean, you know, we've all met before. We've seen each other, but it's been quite a while. So to what do we owe the pleasure?
So we are now next-door neighbors. Our Dog Nation World Headquarters Studios, literally about 10 steps from where we're talking right now. So I thought, why not just walk over and do this in person?
That's really cool. That's awesome. So is this going to be an every Tuesday deal?
I certainly am happy to be here. I guess whatever works for y'all works for me.
I mean, we're always here on Tuesday, so yeah.
Yeah, we're never on remote on Tuesdays.
We're never remote on Tuesdays.
Like the most, like the least common remote day, so there we have it. And there's also a lot to talk about today as well because of the SEC meetings going on down there in Destin. We can get to what Greg Sankey said yesterday, but let's start with what Kirby said today, which is that he thinks the biggest issue facing college football right now, the thing they need to fix first, is that transfer window that happens in December. What did you make of what he had to say?
Well, I think that's pretty common for coaches. I think they're not that stressed out about compensation. They don't worry about NIL. But I do think the expansive nature of the portal, two different windows, one of them being post-spring, that's the thing that keeps coaches up at night. Whatever you have to pay the players, I think they'll figure out because most of these programs have, you know, access to revenue. But this lack of certainty month to month, year to year, about what your roster is going to look like, who's going to be on it, that is the one thing that I do think coaches want to fix. Now, I don't know when it gets fixed, but if you could give them the power to change anything, that's the thing they want to
change.
What
did you think about some of Sankey's comments? Because it ain't whiny, B.A., but it's whiny.
Yeah, so obviously it's pretty volatile, I'd say. Now, he talks in kind of a monotone way, so I think you only realize after the fact, oh, he's taking a shot at somebody. It's sort of only true after the fact, but I don't think the expansion to 16 teams is a good thing. And even though I do believe the SEC deserves more playoff teams and certainly like the ACC and the Big 12, the idea of these automatic qualifiers, I don't think that's a good idea either, because what's going to end up happening is, let's say you do have that, 16-team playoff, four SEC teams. That means how you get in the playoff is going to be determined basically solely by how you perform within your conference play, which means you'll have non-conference games, but the win, the loss won't be consequential. And so now what you run the risk of, and this is the thing that a lot of our folks who are listening right now love college football just like we all do, what you run the risk of is taking the one thing that's made college football very special, the value of the regular season. We don't have load management. We don't have meaningless regular season games. We have pretty high drama week to week. That's why the sport's still so much fun. But if you make this change, I do believe that's the kind of tinkering that could potentially break something you can easily go back and fix. I don't think you want to get into a situation where Georgia playing Clemson last year, Texas playing Ohio State this year, where those games essentially become glorified exhibitions where the loser just sort of shrugs their shoulder and say, oh, well, you know, we'll see if we can make this up during conference play. But that's what you're running the risk of having happen for college football right now.
I'll ask you the follow-up that I've asked you a lot of different times about different stories that have taken place in college football, which is, okay, I agree with you. I agree with that. But do you think that that's enough to turn off enough people for it to matter in a big picture? Because you know what I mean? Like, they're weighing all of these things against, like, yeah, it might devalue the regular season a little bit. They're all still going to watch.
Yeah.
And it's going to make us more money at the back end in the playoffs. So, I've asked you that a thousand times about, yeah, that's bad. Do you think it's bad enough?
Is it Ernest Hemingway, the old line about things happen slowly then suddenly? I think I worry about this a little bit, where if there's any erosion in fan support right now, it's happening so slowly we can't even see it. But that doesn't mean that one day it doesn't happen suddenly. And look, right now, and I think we've talked about this before, the games are so good. And like, the games are so good that it's impervious to the sort of, I think, kind of sort of not always quite so smart tinkering that people at the top want to do. But that also creates a level of hubris where all of a sudden now you sort of use that as a permission structure to say, we can do whatever we want to try to, like, get more money because people are going to still always going to watch the games. Well, guess what? Back in, like, say, 2005, 2006, people would have said the same thing about NASCAR, and look what's happened to it over the course of the last two decades, that things don't always – they're not always guaranteed just to sort of continue in the same manner they've always gone.
I don't know if I ever asked you this. What is your thoughts on the 8 or 9 SEC games?
I think 9 is better than 8. And I'll tell you what the problem that would have solved a year ago. Now, I could give you, I think, several reasons, but let me give you one that always kind of comes to mind for me. We had a situation a year ago because so few of the top teams played each other, where I think at the end of the year, and I say this as someone who's obsessed with SEC football, I don't think we really knew, well, how does this team fully compare to this team or that team compare to that team? And we had, I would say, somewhat playoff-level teams, such as, like, say, Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina. They lost 3 times. They were excluded from the playoff, but they also played different schedules than, like, say, Texas played. If you have a 9-game conference schedule, more of those teams would play each other. Mm-hmm. And if you really are going to get 4 teams in the playoff, whether it's official automatic qualifiers, that's just what you get selected to have, I think you'll have better certainty as to who your 9 games are. Plus, when you look at the overall, like, TV ratings, things like that, which I only partially care about, people really like SEC versus SEC competition. So by giving a 9th conference game, now that ESPN seems willing to pay for it, I do think in that particular instance, you're giving people more of what they want, and I do think it makes your tiebreaker scenarios at the end of the season a little easier to sift through because you'll have more common games between the top teams.
Brandon Adams joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy in studio, host of the Dog Nation Daily podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily as well. One of the things that Greg Sankey mentioned in his answer about some of the future decisions that are being made is what's best for college football, right? And whether or not someone else is doing what's best for college football, he doesn't need to be lectured on what's best for college football. Does he have an obligation to even really worry about what's best for college football at large, or is his focus more on what's best for the teams that are in the SEC?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and we could probably talk about that for a very long time.
Oh, you didn't know this.
When, in studio.
When guests say good question, we celebrate.
Yes. Oh, good. Well, that's also a little bit of a crutch to sort of give me a chance to think of an answer to, just to be completely honest.
No, it wasn't. You just really love the question.
So let's compare Greg Sankey to Kevin Warren for a minute. Kevin Warren, when he was Big Ten commissioner, blew up all of college athletics, brought USC, UCLA into the Big Ten, Washington, Oregon followed. And then shortly after that, he just left, and he's the president of the Chicago Bears now. So that's clearly someone who was only kind of using college athletics as a plaything until he found the job, I guess, that he really wanted. I do think, by comparison, Greg Sankey is a college athletics lifer, so maybe by just instinct, he thinks more about the true best instincts for, plan for college athletics going forward. But ultimately, his bosses are the university presidents and their athletic directors who represent those university presidents. So in the short term, probably what's best for the SEC is the job he gets paid to do. But if nobody ever thinks about what's best for college football, then what we're going to end up with is not going to be what's best for college football.
Yeah.
So where do they go now? I mean, because all I'm just waiting for, what is it, 98 days? I just need college football.
Wow. Yeah.
I think it's less. I think it's like 95 or 4.
I take it.
Yeah, you're closer.
When are they trying to fast-track all this in European before these 90-whatever days?
Randy, to slightly change the subject, they don't even know how many guys are going to be on the roster a few weeks from now. The House settlement is supposed to determine whether or not there's like a roster cap of 105 people. We've been talking about this for at least a year.
Mm-hmm.
We're to the deadline of this being decided. They don't even know that. Like, they are literally building the rocket ship as it's flying through space.
Yeah, they don't know that. They don't know how many conference games they're going to play.
No.
They don't know how many teams are going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
We're talking about for the 2025 season, right?
Yeah, they have the schedule in place for the 2025 season,
yeah.
But they don't have the long-term schedule in place beyond this year, and they don't know what their roster limits are going to be. They have no idea.
When they're not committed to 12 either for this year, 26 playoff.
Like, yeah, oh, yeah, we could have.
It could be 16. The next time we have a playoff, like, they don't have a plan for that either.
Yeah, beyond this year, things are going to look wildly different.
It is remarkable to me, and again, it shouldn't be because we've been covering this the whole time, but, like, how many people have just sort of looked to the next guy and been mm-hmm. like, well, maybe he'll do it. And then he looked to the next guy, and he was like, well, maybe he'll do it. And ultimately, no one's done it. And here we are. The deadline coming. Now, deadlines spur action, we always say on this show, and maybe this will be the thing that gets some of this stuff done. But it is pretty wild how many people have made a lot of money
mm-hmm.
not making any decisions for what the future of some of this stuff looks like.
Let me give you one thing to think about as it relates to that, though. We are also coming into a world in the very near future where ESPN's business dynamics are about to change. They're about to start offering an a la carte service that's not connected to cable. A lot of the money that college football has raked in recent years has been coming from the traditional old school kind of cable model. I'm still a cable subscriber, for instance. I do think this easy, you know, kind of faucet of money that always seems to run, that was really nice and good when cable and ESPN sort of functioned the way it always did. Let's see what it looks like when people now have to pay $30 a month for ESPN that don't kind of have the traditional mm-hmm. cable model. I wonder if some of that also spurs change too, because the business of TV that college football has raked all this money from, that's also about to really, really change. And that could be the kind of thing that sort of forces college football to sort of figure out, okay, exactly what kind of structure do we want to have for the foreseeable future?
Hopefully something forces it. They've had time. They mm-hmm. haven't done it. That's another one of those things, too, where it's like, we'll just do it a la carte, charge $30. They'll pay it.
Yeah.
And they've been right so far.
I'm about to say.
Because I've subscribed to everything.
Yeah, just watch your team.
Just to watch my team.
Yeah.
Yeah. We watched a game. What was it on? It was on TikTok last year. And Washington played Illinois on TikTok.
Oh, is that right?
No, not really. But it's coming. It's coming.
Before you know it, I would have believed it, I guess.
Washington played them on Craigslist. They were streaming it live on Craigslist. Thank you, BA. Brandon Adams in studio. Always love the conversation. Follow him on Twitter, @DogNationDaily. We'll come back and get to an AMA. Any question, any topic?
Attention, sports enthusiasts. Keep the adrenaline pumping and elevate your game day with Chumba Casino. It's completely free to play. No purchase necessary. Whether you're cheering from the stands, on the move, or relaxing at home, Chumba Casino brings the thrill of social casino directly to your fingertips. Experience the ultimate social casino adventure with reels of casino-style games offering hundreds of exciting options to choose from and fresh new releases every week. There's always something new and thrilling to explore, from action-packed
packed social slots and classic blackjack to engaging bingo and solitaire. The fun never stops. Plus, enjoy generous daily login bonuses and a fantastic free welcome bonus to kickstart your social gaming journey. Dive into the excitement. Discover a world where you can play for your chance to redeem some serious prizes and have a blast along the way. Don't miss out. What are you waiting for? Join now and immerse yourself in nonstop fun and adventure with Chumba Casino. Get in on the action today at ChumbaCasino.com and make every day a Chumba day. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus TNC supply.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Lines are open, 404-726-0929. Call us up, ask us anything. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Poll is starting to blow up at C. Thomas Radio at 92.9 The Game. At Dom, you're live. And appreciate everybody who jumped on the phones. We'll take more of your calls coming up in the next hour. Would you take a fourth-round pick in return for Kyle Pitts? Make sure you go vote at C. Thomas Radio. That is also where you'll find my pinned tweet to download the podcast. If you're not subscribed, please do. Links are there for Odyssey, Apple, and Spotify. Why a fourth-round pick, Turtle? Well, because it's being reported that the Falcons are looking for a day two pick for Kyle Pitts in a report from Jordan Schultz and others that multiple teams have inquired, and that is the asking price. And I say that asking price is ludicrous. You are not getting Kyle Pitts for a second or a third round pick. There is no chance. Hell doth frozen over first before that happens. So I think the most realistic option is a fourth round pick. Let's see what our next guest has to say on the WadeFord.com hotline. Joe Patrick joins me. Joe, before you answer that, a little birdie told me, a.k.a. Twitter, that we're going to be able to hear a lot more of you coming up in just a couple of days here. Why don't you tell the audience about what you're doing and how and where and when they can find it?
Yeah, it's exciting. I'll be doing a podcast that you can find basically anywhere you get podcasts, or I believe on YouTube. We're still hashing out some of the details, but yeah, I'll be putting those out on a semi-regular basis here starting soon while we're in the off season, kind of going over the team. And then once training camp hits and we get into the season, we'll be going Monday through Friday with a, 20 to 30 minute show of me, and I'll be, asking some people from 92.9 to join, whether it might be you some days, Chris, or maybe some of our other talents, and maybe some guys who have played in the NFL who can shed some insight with me. But looking forward to just breaking down this team and, just doing more of the same of, what I've been doing on your show and others. So I'm just happy to be able to hopefully connect with some more listeners and getting excited for this Falcon season.
Well,
I've got to rate Kyle Pitts, huh?
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, real quick. I only owe you about 2,000 hits, so anytime you need me, you just over the years. So you just let me
That's
know.
Right. And I've got a lot banked. I got a lot of collateral banked.
Yeah, hey, you got Andy and Randy every week. You got Dukes and Bell. Yeah. I feel like you could tap in to the entire radio station pretty much. All right, so yeah, like I said, Joe, I just don't see a planet in which if you do move Kyle Pitts? First of all, do you think it's even likely, or is this just fodder? And second of all, I mean, a second or a third round pick, Joe, to me is just an impossibility. I think you need to start, if you're being realistic, in a fourth round pick.
Yeah, I think that that's responsible of you, Chris, to kind of to do that, because, and we'll see, you know, what I always say is, I hate to kind of put a value on players like this, because ultimately it doesn't matter what I think. It's just like that whatever his value is going to be determined by the offers that Atlanta does or does not receive. And I am like you, would be surprised if they do get that day two pick. And for that reason, I suspect that this trade won't ultimately happen. But having said that, I do think that there's, you know, a pretty decent chance. And when I say pretty decent, that means like 25 to 30%. That to me is like a pretty good chance of something happening in the NFL, just because of the nature of these things. I would say the reason why this kind of confounds me so much, this situation, is just the way that the reporting has unfolded this week. And I would have thought that, you know, it feels to me like there's something happening behind the scenes, particularly with some of these reports that are coming out. And I wonder if it's maybe somebody from the Pitts camp who is trying to, you know, make a move happen for his client to get them in a better situation. You know, he's obviously going into a huge year where he'll be on the free agent market after this season. And, you know, in Atlanta, he just hasn't, especially, you know, under Zach Robinson last year, just not a real high volume target type of guy. And I think that maybe, you know, if they could feel like if he could land in a better spot where he is going to get more catches and just have better statistical output, then that's going to result in more money for him on the free agent market, or he could, you know, that team might just love him and want to sign him and extend him long term. But the reason I say that is because when I was there this week, you know, I was talking to sources when, you know, we were there, because we didn't see him out on the field. And I just feel like if he was in the building at that time, it's very possible that he was. I'm not discounting the fact that he was. But it seems strange to me that nobody made mention of that at the time. Even when Raheem Morris spoke to the press, you know, earlier, I would have thought that if he was in the building with a small foot injury that he was just getting treated, you know, Raheem Morris would have mentioned that, because he knows that Kyle Pitts is a key player that people look out for, especially when you're going out for the first day of media being at OTA. So I just would have thought that if that was true, you know, they would have just made mention of that. And so that's why it was so confusing for me. And like, for example, Troy Anderson did not practice when we were there. I did see him walking around outside, and, you know, maybe it's a difference because, you know, Kyle Pitts has a foot injury maybe and can't be walking around outside in front of people. I don't know, but the whole thing just kind of doesn't smell right to me. And so that's what makes me think that there's just happenings going on in the background that makes me think that there is genuine thing. There's movement in trying to make a deal for him. But I think in this situation, it's more of the Falcons kind of, you know, I like the Kirk Cousins situation, they hold the cards. And if they just don't feel like they're getting value that they would want for a player like Pitts, then they're very happy to hold on to him and let him, you know, be their tight end this year.
The other thing that needs to be considered too is there's a lot of other guys with a lot more import to the roster that are going to need to get paid, like Bijan Robinson, Matthew Bergeron, Drake London. Those guys are all going to need long-term deals, mm-hmm. and it's never too early if he's going to be the guy that we think he could be, Joe, to start thinking about how much you're going to have to set aside for Michael Penix Jr. So if Kyle Pitts is going to want anywhere in the vicinity of, I just looked it up, top 10 tight end money, that's anywhere between $13 to $17 million, with the top-end guys making close to $20 million. I just don't think the Falcons are going to be in a position to pay that, even if he is successful.
That is the nail. You hit the nail on the head there, Chris. Like, it's one of the reasons why I've just never felt like he was going to be in this team's plans long term. And I wonder if he feels that way, and his agent maybe feels that way. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, they are, you know, anxious to try to find something else. But just when you look at making the monies all work, you just always felt like it was going to be hard to keep together every single one of these top players they drafted, especially in the case of Kyle Pitts, a player who, frankly, has not lived up statistically to, you know, what they would have hoped out of, you know, that such a high draft pick. And, you know, obviously Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Michael Penix, of course, those already are cornerstone pieces for you. And Kyle Pitts, clearly, just with the performance and value you've gotten on the field, doesn't kind of fit that. And if he's not a cornerstone piece for you, then you've got to your point, you got to set aside, you know, the money and make sure you can get those cornerstone guys kind of set in peace for the long term.
A lot of talk going on this week from Raheem Morris and others about the growth and development of Michael Penix Jr., talking about him coming out of a shell and being more of a vocal leader. Joe, my whole point about that is, like, I don't need him to be that. If that's not what he is, I don't need him to be that. Just be yourself, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, but I think that, like, to playing quarterback, you have to be you do have to be kind of proactive in terms of, like, kind of coordinating the team. And when you're on the field, you know, it's your responsibility pretty much to make sure that everybody's in place. And just from a leadership perspective, that does take some kind of vocal ability in general. Chris, though, I do think that we make a lot. These are the kinds of stories that we talk about in May, you know, of a football team is, you know, the new quarterback kind of, you know, becoming more of a leader, or, you know, any second year player, you know, growing from their rookie year and all this stuff. So I say that I just kind of laugh because these are just normal media stories. I do think that it is cool that he is, you know, the way he talks about kind of getting out of his comfort zone. He's picked up golf in order to do that, to connect with some of these guys, because it's a big golfing group in the Falcons roster. And it's kind of cool from what I heard, actually, from Zach Robinson, who is a big golfer himself. The Falcons players have, like, a text chain, you know, with a bunch of them who play, and they'll just use it to you know, get foursomes together to go out and play. And I, you know, that spans everybody. I know Kyle Pitts is a big golfer on this team. He's kind of joked about it with Michael Penix on social media. Ryan Neuzel, who just got a new contract this week, he is, what I hear, from what I hear, he's the best golfer on the team, actually. And he just happens to excel in country club sports. That's what I hear. But yeah, so I think that that's great. And I think that it should, you just need to have some of those shared experiences together so that you feel comfortable in, frankly, like, chewing a teammate out when he needs to in a given situation, or, you know, demanding more from a teammate. And so that's when you start to build up that kind of that social capital during this time.
Joe, I can't believe the words that are about to come out of my mouth. Can Atlanta United make it 3 in a row tomorrow?
Dude, what the hell? This is incredible. Like, I think I said it on this show, Chris, when we talked, for as dismal as it's looked, and for as poorly as I've frankly talked about how bad they've looked, I think I said, at least on this show, but I know I've said it before, that even when they were in the last couple of games that they did not get results in before these last two wins, I felt like they had found a little something tactically. And I think that what we saw in these last two games was them just round into more form within that tactical setup that Ronnie Dyla implemented. He basically changed the team from a 4-2-3-1 shape to more of a 5-3-2, basically. Just adding a defender in the back so that you're not getting as burned when players make mistakes. Alexi Maranchuk, it kind of hides his athletic deficiencies and allows him to get on the ball with some time. And he's been able to pick out some passes and also work his way up in the box. He has had a goal and several assists in these last two games. So they're finally getting the kind of designated production that you always wanted out of him. And I think that there's still room for this team to get better from here. Like, Miguel Almiron hasn't even played well, frankly, in these two games and for most of the season, to be perfectly honest. If he could get into a little bit more form and maybe unlock the bottleneck that's happening, that's preventing Latte Lott from getting a lot of service, I think both those players could still kind of explode in terms of the goal production that they provide. And, you know, it's going to be tough this week up at Red Bulls because they historically have never won there in their history. And they're coming off, you know, this will be what, their third game in 7 days or whatever. But I do think that going forward, this team, I'm feeling way more optimistic about this team. And it's not just because they scratched out these two wins, Chris. It's more of the way they did it was very encouraging. And I think it's showing some sustainability in being able to score your own goals, which they just haven't been able to do enough this season. They're still undefeated when they score at least twice in the game.
All right, Joe, we will see what happens on Monday when we reconvene. And maybe Kyle Pitts is playing in who knows where. Arizona. Or something.
We shall see.
Arizona definitely doesn't need him. We'll see. We'll see if and when Mr. Pitts gets moved. All right, Joe.
A reunion with Arthur Smith, perhaps?
Well, you know what? If he doesn't get Jonnu Smith, maybe,
exactly.
Maybe that's his guy. All right, Joe. Appreciate the time. We'll chat on Monday.
Yeah. Happy Friday, everybody. It's Dukes and Bell. We're hanging out at Twin Peaks. We just heard an incredible story. Mike and I were reminiscing about how lucky we've been to not fall through a ceiling, as one of our good listeners was just showing us some pictures.
Yeah.
Look, it's that time of year, guys.
Home improvements. Yeah. In this case, our buddy works in the HVAC business. But, all of a sudden, if you're hanging out at that house, our boy Tinker fell through the roof, through the ceiling like the Kool-Aid man. Instead of a wall, he came through the ceiling. Oh, yeah.
Just lucky to not be injured anymore. Right. Hey, man, let's spend some time with our buddy B-Mac. And, again, his camp's coming up. We'll talk more about it here at the end to get some more information. B, I hope you're getting some real progress on that, because I'm excited about the camp that's going to happen here coming up over at Milton High School. But I want to ask you about Kyle Pitts. There's a report out that Mike and I were talking about. Where the Falcons are fielding calls, and apparently there are, you know, more than one team interested in seeing about his availability. Right. Would you trade Kyle Pitts if you're the Falcons, B-Mac?
Yes, I would. I would, and here's why. Clearly, the compensation has to make sense for the organization. But just entertaining the opportunity to trade Kyle Pitts, it makes all the sense in the world, because when you look at Kyle Pitts, outside of his rookie campaign, he hasn't really lived up to the billing, you know, because of injuries and not just being involved in the offense. Whatever reason you want to throw out, it just hasn't come to fruition like many thought it would be. But, Carl, we talked about this last week. You know, if Kyle Pitts come, if 2025 is a resurgence of his career, if he has, 800 yards receiving, 8 or 9 touchdowns, he's going to ask for a massive contract. A contract in a high level in terms of the tight end position. And you said last week that you wouldn't entertain paying him that, right? So understanding that could potentially be a realistic opportunity for Kyle Pitts. If you're Atlanta and the compensation is definitely up to your liking and what you would get in trading Kyle Pitts, I really do believe you have to consider doing so.
Yeah, I don't know if we'd ever get what we wanted. And it's funny, as we've talked to you about him now so many years. And, Brian, you know, is it the play calling? Is it the lack of effort? Is it, you know, 2 of his 4 years he had bums at quarterback? So, I mean, there's no, to me, cut and dry answer. But regardless, you're the 4th overall pick. You're supposed to be better than that at the end of the day.
Exactly. And when he was drafted where he was, the expectations were overly high. You know what I mean? Being a top 5 player at that position, people are anticipating you coming in having the Brock Bowers type of effect. Not just a 1-year type of situation, but being consistent in that Travis Kelce range, in that George Kittle range. Hey, look at what Sam LaPorta has been able to do for the Detroit Lions when he's been healthy. Wasn't drafted as high as Kyle Pitts, but those were the expectations for Kyle Pitts. And even after year 2 and year 3, people in Atlanta were still hoping for that type of production. And to your point, you haven't really lived up to the billing. Now, for Atlanta, they picked with the 5th-year option, of course, and because of that, he's still a part of the team. So I think the organization is still hoping they can get a glimpse of what he did his rookie campaign. But if there's other teams that's willing to give up the assets that you would like to receive in return, I don't think you say no to that. I actually think you need to consider that option.
Kyle Pitts, by the way, 13th in yards, 22nd in overall receptions.
Nah.
Yeah, but Mike, it's the other numbers that jump out at you when you start talking about Pitts. And I'll just give you an example, because this is kind of our conversation when we talk about the Falcons today. OTAs have happened. They'll get back to, you know, OTAs next week and then mandatory minicamp. But when you start saying, okay, how open was he? And this is not coming from me. This is coming from, you know, reports that were out there during the season. When you start saying, okay, was he open? Because Mike and I discussed this, you know, B, and we say, is he open? 41 of 43 tight ends to get open per tracking data. So he was the 41st out of 43 tight ends at getting open? Not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 41st?
That goes back to what Greg Olsen said on national TV about him.
So, like, stuff like that, you start to wonder, okay, well, what about the yak, yards after catch? He was 55th in the league. Like, those are things that you feel like you should be getting more production from Kyle Pitts.
Exactly, and those are, you know, a few of the reasons why I think you should entertain what other teams are offering, because his skill set should not warrant those numbers. Those numbers, no. I'm talking about a guy who came out running 4.4. I'm talking about a guy who dominated SEC. I'm talking about a guy who is a 6.5, 6.6 receiver that has the ability to create separation. But something has happened between year one and from what we saw last year in year four. And I said this last week, when you talk about the inconsistencies with Kirk Cousins a year ago, and even when Michael Penix jumped into the lineup at the end of the season, the inconsistencies at the quarterback position didn't hurt Drake London for having an outstanding career. I mean, outstanding season in 2024. The inconsistencies that some people want to hint to did not hurt Darnell Mooney for making plays. Heck, even Ray McCloud showed up. But there's something about Kyle Pitts that seemed to be disengaged with the offense. You know what I mean? And outside of that touchdown against the Commanders, you know, he didn't really have any signature plays in 2024.
Yeah, we talked about the two touchdowns down in Tampa. That's arguably his best game as a pro. Our man B-Mac, Brian McFadden, guys, two-time Super Bowl winners. We're live from Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. Post-June 1st is when everybody starts to move, save some loot. Dolphins will save just under $6 million if they get Ramsey off the roster. Who's going to trade for Jalen Ramsey? I know we've asked you about this before with us. Is Jalen Ramsey still an elite corner in this league?
You know what? I wouldn't say elite, but I definitely would say he's still a really, really good corner. I think he's a good corner that could really improve the entire defense. The thing I love about Jalen Ramsey, we can talk about the coverage side of things, but he is a willing participant in tackling. This is a guy that loves to tackle the ball carrier, and he boosts the morale and the energy of a secondary. I'm still confused about why Miami is trying to trade him. I mean, they lost Javon Holland to free agency. Now you're moving your best corner. That doesn't make any sense. It's almost like the Miami Dolphins are forcing a rebuild, especially on the defensive side. But if I'm Atlanta, I entertain that. You know, if I'm the Rams, and clearly we're hearing, you know, some rumors being thrown out that the Rams are really entertaining trying to bring Jalen Ramsey back to L.A. And if you're Raheem Morris, you know exactly what type of player he is. Now, that salary is extremely hefty, you know, for this upcoming season because I think he signed an extension with Miami last summer. So clearly there's a lot of money that's commanded for him if you pick up Jalen Ramsey via trade. But, you know, if there's a way to kind of finagle some of the moves and money and maybe have Miami eat some of that contract, I mean, if you're Atlanta, no question, man, now is the time, man. If you're Terry Fontenot, you can't continue to miss the playoffs in a below-average division. You can't. Like, New Orleans, rebuild. Carolina still trying to figure things out. It's basically a one-team division in the NFC South, and it's Tampa. And Tampa has really outkicked their coverage when you look at how consistent and dominant they've been. So if you're Atlanta, if you're Terry Fontenot, you got to exercise every option that's available for you to improve your team to try to get to the playoffs. We kind of saw that aggressive mentality in the draft. You know, when they traded back in to get James Pierce, keep that same mentality now in the offseason if there's a player that can actually help your team.
B, you played for the Steelers. Look, there are certain organizations, Packers, Steelers, Ravens, 49ers have done this, where there's a sense that, you know what, they know what they're doing, and it doesn't matter what players they end up getting or drafting. And then you think about, you know, organizations like Cincinnati. And I bring this up because Trey Hendrickson says he's dug in. They're not coming off of any money for him right now, and I don't think they're going to pay him. What was the impression when you were in the league of Cincinnati? Because I don't know. Were they good when you were playing those guys? I mean, they had some great players, but, you know, it was always like they never wanted to go the extra to really go all out and make the team what it should be.
To your point, Carl, Mike, yes, they had good players, but they weren't a winning organization. And the mindset for the Cincinnati Bengals when I got drafted in 2005 where they were overly cheap. They were bargain shoppers, but they were cheap bargain shoppers. I remember when I got drafted in 2005, guys, Cincinnati didn't even have an indoor facility. So when it was cold outside in November, December, January, they didn't have the option of going inside to get a good practice. They had to endure the conditions outside. Think about that. Think about being a northern organization for forever, and we're talking about 2005, 2006, you don't have an indoor facility? That tells you how cheap the organization has been. And yes, they've dispersed money over the last few years, but they still have that cheap mantra with them. Right. If you're Trey Hendrickson, you had 17 and a half sacks a year ago, which led the NFL. This year, your salary is $15 million. You had more sacks a year ago than what you're supposed to receive in salary. Why would anyone think you would come show up for the organization when your per year salary is $15 million. And don't forget this. In 2023, he had 17 sacks as well. So the last 2 years, this guy has reached 17 sacks, playing a part of a below average defense, being the only guy you really got a game plan for, and you're still getting numbers. And he's begging for money. He was trying to get a contract a year ago. Him and Jamar Chase, remember in the summertime, but he became the ultimate professional. He tapered those feelings. He came to the camp, had an outstanding year. Now he's doing the same thing. So to your point, Carl, no, they're not going to pay him what he's looking for. The only way this gets resolved, if Trey Hendrickson lowers his financial expectations, if he says, you know what, I don't want to get the market value for pass rushers, you can go ahead and give me X amount of dollars, I take it. Because they're not going to give him what the pass rusher market is right now.
Right. Hey, before we cut you loose, Meng, you did play with the Steelers. We just talked about Brian Schottenheimer. We played some audio earlier in the show, new coach of the Cowboys. Is Pickens going to be flying straight down in Dallas? And is this the offense going to be dynamic? Or is, you know, Dallas will be a great regular season team and just gack it in the playoffs again?
You know what, Mike? I really hope this is an eye-opening experience for George, where he can just be dialed in and focused, because he's an ultra-ly talented player. You don't question that. You don't question his mentality. He's a baller, man. It's just some of the other antics made him expendable for Pittsburgh to move on for him. But if he's dialed in, CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens will be a top three duo of wide receivers in the National Football League, and they won't be three. If he's dialed in, because you can say whatever you want to say about Dak Prescott and the playoff woes. When Dak has been healthy in the regular season, they've won ball games, and he's put up numbers. He's put up numbers. And a year ago with the Cowboys, there were a lot they were dealing with. Dak Prescott got injured. You know, Michael Parsons missed time. So many players on all three levels of the defensive side was missing with injuries. So it was a tough year. But if they can stay healthy and George Pickens is there, he's dialed in, man, that offense could be one of those offenses when you look at it at the end of the season, you're like, wow, that's one of the great offenses. Now, will that lead to a championship-like run? I'm not saying that, but I'm just talking about in terms of regular season matchups. And get this, guys, we don't have to really wait long to see exactly how this thing is going to look in Dallas. Thursday night, they got who? Philly. They got Philly. So yeah, we're going to get everything we want to see the first week of the season when Dallas traveled to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Great stuff, B. As always, enjoy the weekend. Real quick before we go, tell the people how they can contact you about the camp that's going on in Milton with the DBs.
Yes, sir. Please hit me up, man. I've already been receiving some inquiries about the camp from last week. It's June 7th and 8th. We're planning on having a symposium on Friday to talk some about NIL opportunities, you know, trying to understand and know questions to ask these coaches in terms of prospects, you know, for the guardians and the loved ones that's overseeing and helping these prospects, you know, make the best decision for them in terms of universities to attend and, of course, NIL and how to set up certain financial portfolios. And then we're on the grass on Saturday. Hit me up on my social media, BMAC_sports talk, all sources the same handle. Hit me up if you want any information, and it's free for rising ninth graders to rising seniors. Anyone in this area who love the backpedal, who want to continue to excel and become a better corner, safety, nickel, whatever the case may be, we're gonna have NFL pros, man, former NFL players, you know, constructing each session, each station, and trying to make sure you guys get the best that you need to be able to be at for your season, for your team this upcoming year.
Make sure you contact BMAC, guys. And again, we'll be out there. It's going to be a lot of fun. B, have a great weekend, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thank you.
You know, when I was a corner, they tried me a corner like one day at practice.
You could backpedal?
Yeah, we had a scrimmage against Levittown Division, and I got burned. And as the guy was going by me, I just reached out and tripped him. And it was that's done. No more.
It's hey, man. You. Coming up, we got Yeah Man, No Man. We're live at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. We are talking about this Kyle Pitts situation. We're going to get back into it. B-Mac says if he's the Falcons, he would trade him. He would look to trade him.
Welcome in our good buddy D. Orlando Ledbetter of the AJC. And D, let's start here. Anything to make of Mr. Cousins making his presence not felt early on here at voluntary OTAs?
No, not at all, Chris. They didn't even expect him for, you know, the off-season program. He showed for that, apparently. And then, you know, went undercover. But Zach Robinson said he's, you know, working, trying to get himself in shape at his own pace and everything, but he's kind of extracted himself from the team to make it clear to them that he wants out of here. You know, he wants to be able to play. But, you know, the options are not they're just not there. And so no real surprise at all. They weren't even expecting it.
So at what point during the season, during the summer, does it become mandatory for him to be there if, in fact, he actually is going to be the backup, D?
June 10th, 11th, and 12th, the mandatory mini camps. Everything else is voluntary. You can get fined for those, not coming to those. And the teams usually waive the fines if, you know, guys have a valid reason for not attending.
We also saw that Kyle Pitts was first reported not to be there, then D reported to be inside working on a potential injury. What do we know about that?
Yeah, you know, that's just, you know, what we had to, that he was inside, he was not there. And, you know, I don't know about an injury. They don't have to report injuries in the off season. We do, you know, Kid Zagora was leading our team out there this week. And he didn't know if it was a big deal or not that he wasn't there. And then I told him that, hey, you know, kid, he has been in the off season talking about how hard he's been working and so forth. So that was a big deal if he wasn't there. And if there's an injury, you know, they don't have to report it until actually the first week of the season there.
Yeah, it's interesting. James Palmer, formerly of NFL Network, was reporting, D, that he's dealing with a foot issue. So that's not great, especially him going into a contract year, but we'll see just how minor or major that injury turns out to be. Okay, a lot of praise for Michael Penix this week, D, of Raheem Morris saying he's really coming into his own as a leader, but I think one thing we established last season, he's not really a rah-rah type of guy, and I don't know if he even really needs to be that, D, in order for the offense to thrive.
No, just be yourself. You know, you're not that rah-rah type of guy. You're a business, take care of business guy. We've seen that work. We've seen Matt Ryan do that. And we've seen him as he got to be a veteran, show his fiery side. You know, be comfortable. Be, you know, do who you are. Be who you are. That's gotten you this far. There's no sense of changing to meet some kind of notion of what the perceived notion of what the quarterback should be. Be Michael Penix, and if that's good enough, we'll see here in a few weeks.
Saw Zach Robinson also spoke. He was talking about his own growth as an offensive coordinator. Did you like what he did in year one? And more importantly, did you see growth by the end of the season?
Yeah, I did. I thought Zach did a great year calling things. You know, you would see guys breaking open on routes, and, you know, the ball was there most times. Sometimes it wasn't. But, yeah, they coordinated the run game and matched it up with the passing attack. Really liked how they got a lot out of Darnell Mooney and more out of Ray-Ray McCloud than was expected. I think that was a career year for him. And, you know, they leaned on Bijan and Drake London. So that all made sense to me. The one thing they need to add is the explosive runs, you know, that we saw Saquon Barkley do for the Eagles last year. So, and then, you know, the tight end, and if you can get Kyle Pitts going, that'll really give you some options as teams kind of slide to Drake and Bijan. So, I really like what he did. They got to get a little bit more power. Didn't like them getting stopped on 1 yard against the Chiefs when they needed it. They tried to go sideways, and it didn't work. You know, I don't have to have the tooth push, but I need to, you know, if I can't play football and get a yard, then what are we out there for? So I need to see a power package from him.
Talking all things Falcons with our insider here from the AJC, D. Orlando Ledbetter. Make sure you follow him on Twitter and check out his stuff in the AJC for all the latest from Flowery Branch. All right, when it comes to other things that Raheem Morris was talking about, he was talking about the leadership of Jesse Bates and what he brings. We all know about that at this point in his Falcons career, D, but how important is that going to be to the mentorship and growth of a guy in Xavier Watts that may be required to start from the jump?
Yeah, no doubt. Xavier Watts is a sharp individual. He's going to pick things up quickly. So that's one I think we got to worry about there. And you got Jordan Fuller to help him out. You know, if he hits, he's going to hit some rough patches, no question about it. But then you could, you know, maybe sit him down if you need to and get Fuller out there.
or, you know, start Fuller and bring him along slower. Yeah, he's, you know, we all saw him play. We saw what he did against Georgia last season and what he did in the championship game throughout that magical season for the Fighting Irish. So he's not one to worry about. The other kid, Billy Bowman, though, you know, moving him to nickel and then him talking about working on his tackling, you know, that's problematic for me for a defender. You know, but hopefully he can work on his tackling, not have the missed tackles, and maybe he can win that nickel spot.
Where do you think a guy like, speaking of, where do you think a guy like Clark Phillips stands with this organization right now, going into year three, has played a decent amount, but hasn't really been able to establish himself, D?
Yeah, make or break year. They liked how he stayed in phase with receivers that were faster than him, didn't make plays on the ball. You know, was noted as a sure tackler. It's a make or break year for him. He could be here as a top reserve or a starter at nickel, or he could be out on the street like Darren Hall after a couple years of activity. And, you know, it's a long list of guys that drafted at cornerback in the mid rounds that haven't made it. So his job is now he's going to get opportunity to play and make it and stick in the NFL. So this is a big year for that young man.
We saw, as is customary early on in the year, that the rookies and the UDFAs and all those guys don't really get much run in early practice drills. But how soon do you think a guy like Jalen Walker or James Pierce could be running with the ones?
Jalen right away. Walker, they can mix him in. I mean, Walker right away, and Pierce, they're going to mix him in. They got five guys over there. Leonard Floyd's number one, so Jalen's two, and I got Pierce as three, and Avery Katie four, and Trice five, so... not expecting Pierce to be a starter, expecting him to be a third down rusher, you know, because he just can't play the 245, 255 ends and think he's going to stop the run. So, and then if they get a lead and, you know, teams will drop back passing, then you can play him on first and second down. So that's the unique part of him, and that's how I envision him. I just don't see him at 245 going toe-to-toe with 320-pound tackles first, second, and third down. Right away.
When it comes to the linebacking core, Caden Ellis was praising the efforts of Jalen Walker right away. I know the plan D, and we've talked about it before, is to keep him on the edge, but I still contest, you know, part of the reason you take him at 15 is because he's so damn versatile. I just feel like not allowing him to spread his wings, so to speak, could be a mistake if the Falcons especially need the help at linebacker. What do you feel?
Yeah, no doubt about it. But, you know, listen to what Coach says. He says, we're going to start at edge. That means that that's not where they're going to end. So he's going to start him at edge. Once he gets that down, then they can put more on his plate and move him around like they did at Georgia. Move him inside. Let him rush from the inside with Ellis, who's also a very good blitzer. They can do the double A-gap blitz with those guys. So remember what he said. He said he's going to start at the edge. I didn't say he's going to stay at the edge. But that's where it's going to start. When he gets that down, then they can start adding more to his plate and so forth. So that's what I fully expect. And that could be over the exhibition season. It could be over the season. But, yeah, they're going to bring him along. They don't want to overload him. That's what you know, you see happens with a lot of young guys. They give them too much, and then they're out there thinking. And then, you know, they're watching screens develop and, you know, and can't get out there to them. And, you know, they could just go haywire. So they want to bring him along. Give him enough at edge. Take your time. Get that together. Now, okay, now we can move to another spot. Get that down and then, you know, make that defense a little bit more, you know, versatile and make it a little bit more diversified.
D, before I let you go, a couple of fun off-the-field questions here. Not sure if you caught this yet, but three former Falcon receivers have started a podcast, and they're making a lot of noise. Harry Douglas, Julio Jones, and Roddy White. And Roddy White specifically said in the first episode that dropped a couple of days ago that back in the day, Kyle Shanahan basically told him that he was the fourth option on the team during his final year in 2015 and that he essentially ran him out of the lineup. And Roddy White did not like that one bit, and he made that felt very clear on the podcast. Was that something, if you can remember, I know it was a while ago, at the time, I know the hashtag Free Roddy movement was going on, but what do you remember about that, and did Roddy have a legitimate beef there with Kyle?
Yeah, we saw that up close and personal. You know, Roddy and Harry and Julio have been great. We had a story on the podcast starting Legacy Locker Room. I'm supposed to talk to Julio tomorrow about retiring and then more on the podcast. But, yeah, Roddy, you know, I don't know if his skills diminished in front of us, but I know once he had that one high ankle sprain, they tried to play him in 14. Maybe he didn't have the bounce that he once had. And Shanahan was, you know, quite frank with him about that. Then, you know, there was complaints about, you know, why was Roddy getting the ball? Roddy said he was getting it in practice. Then early on in one of those games, I think the third or fourth game, they like forced Roddy like four balls right in a row early. And, you know, it didn't work out. And so, you know, they went on that season and then cut him that off season. You know, when he was, I know where I was at. I was at Auburn's pro day when I got the news he had been cut. And Roddy, I know where he was. He was on vacation. So he was in the Caribbean. But Roddy was a great Falcon. He did a great job, and he's certainly entitled to, you know, share his, you know, point of view. But, yeah, you know, it wasn't a lot of love for Kyle Shanahan in that locker room. Even to this day, I think you're going to see some more stuff come out about that. You know, and that when they have Matt Ryan on as a guest, he's going to probably talk about the bootlegs and how he didn't want to run them and so forth. So the Shanahan was definitely the mad scientist here. He did it for 2 years, got him a head coaching job. And we saw one of the greatest NFL seasons offensively of all time in 2016. But, yeah, it wasn't about being friends and buddies with the players. You're going to run his stuff or get open and run his stuff or you weren't you know, going to be playing.
Speaking of which, last one as we wrap up with our buddy D. Orlando Ledbetter. Make sure you check him out in the AJC, All Things Falcons Inside Coverage. Julio said on that same episode, man, I only got four targets in the Super Bowl. Not to bring up old stuff and old wounds, but D, did he have a valid complaint in that game, only getting four targets?
Well, the way it unfolded, they didn't really, you know, they didn't really need him to the end to win it. He won it, but, you know, we know what happened after that. Because, you know, they were you know, he was getting a lot of attention from Belichick. So, you know, I'm surprised. But, you know, they were doing stuff to get him open early in the season. They could have ran him on some more crossers. But, I mean, you know, they had the lead. They were putting points up. So it wasn't like the offense was bogged down until late, of course, and we know how that happened. But, you know, they had it won. I don't have any problems with the four, but maybe you always, you know, think when you got a player like that, you need to get him 8 to 10 touches a game. I don't care if he's double, triple, or quadruple covered.
All right, D, I'm excited to hear about your interview with Julio. That should be exciting. We'll be checking that out in the AJC, and we'll talk soon, D. Thanks.
All right, Chris, take care. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to welcome in National College Sports Reporter for Outkick, Mr. Trey Wallace. Trey, I think the first time I ever talked to you, man, was what was it? What was the name of the station in Mobile that you were on for a little bit? That was like back in 2012,
oh,
I believe.
Oh, gosh. WNST.
There it is.
Mobile. Yeah, man. We go back. So, yes, this is directly the scene as Michael Scott is walking in. Yeah. And there's Dunder Mifflin bosses looking at him like, wait, what? Going on here? Okay.
appreciate you hanging out with us. I do have to tell you, before we get into some of the college football stuff, I was at the Coke 600 last weekend, man. So I know you're a NASCAR guy, and Bubba, you know, your cousin obviously has had great amount of success in that. But I've followed Bubba since having that conversation with you some 12, 13 years ago, man. So that's been a lot of fun.
Man, They gave him such a crap car last weekend to work with. All he was doing was riding around.
Yeah, what's Denny doing? Come on, Denny. Let's go get
that
man a car.
I was going to say, tell it to MJ, Trey. Yeah. You know, Trey, what's funny is the best part is when our Dylan, our producer you talked to, said, hey, we got Trey Wallace coming up. I said, Bubba's cousin, and he goes, no, I don't think so. And I go, no, it's Bubba's cousin. He goes, I mean, maybe, but I don't think so. I'm like, no, they're cousins. Trust me, because Mike and I are both big NASCAR fans. Guy, so man.
We're going down live to
Atlanta. Oh, dude, he sent me. I was so mad at him this morning. He sent us some dumb picture in a group text at like 5:30 this morning. I was like, boy, you got to be kidding me. Don't be doing that stuff this early, man. And whatever. It was a picture of the baby, but I could see Bex anytime. I don't need to see him at 5:30 in the morning. So
I just told him to go over there and get his crew chief up his rear end and get him a better car for this weekend. So, yeah, it is what it is.
We'll see him down at Atlanta Motor Speedway here in a few weeks. I do want to talk, and you're down in Destin, Trey, and obviously, man, you do as good a job as anybody having your pulse on some of the goings on in the SEC. We talked all day about, you know, some of the whispers about the nine-game conference schedule and the thought of the Big Ten-SEC crossover. Where are we at on the nine-game conference schedule? Is this something that you feel like has momentum and should, you know, get done in the near future, or are we still kind of in a holding pattern there?
Yeah, look, I think this gets done. It feels like we've been talking about a nine-game conference schedule for 5 years now, every time we come down to Destin for these spring meetings. But, yeah, no, I do think we're close. And to be honest with you, in talking with some folks behind the scenes that were in these meetings, I think they pretty much got a handshake agreement in place here. You know, it's not going to be formally written out. It's not going to be discussed in a press conference by Greg Sankey. But once the CFP part gets figured out with the format, that's when I think the SEC will announce a nine-game schedule. Now, if, you know, it really comes down to, okay, how many automatic qualifiers and whatnot do you get in the CFP? And I know we'll talk about that. But I think at the end of the day, I do think that they end up moving from 8 to 9, but the kicker is, you know, what does it look like? You're going to eat yourself up in the league and add that additional game and then not have it pay off, you know, with an automatic qualifier, an additional automatic qualifier for the college football playoff. I think that's the big kicker that the athletic directors and presidents want to know. And I think they've got that part figured out. They've been talking about this long enough. But the biggest thing to me is Greg Sankey threw out a deadline for the CFP, and he said December 1st. Well, guys, that's going to get done before December 1st. And they have a massive meeting on June 18th where they will all get together. So, long story short, I think they're ready to go to nine games. I think it would help. I think if you look at the Big Ten and how that part plays out with them, and also don't forget too, one of the driving factors in a lot of this is revenue. And if you can go back to the table and get, let's just say, an extra $6-7 million per team from ESPN and Disney, they're not going to turn down the cash. And at the end of the day, also, I do think it will help them. And I don't think it'll be I don't think it'll go against them. You know, if you're adding a Georgia versus LSU, like every 2 years or whatnot, home and home, I don't think that hurts in the playoff if it's a close game, especially if we get some kind of a format with a number of automatic bids, maybe not just like three or four.
Well, Trey, that's why I'm confused. If they know they're going to nine games, then why are the coaches pushing so hard for this Big Ten, the inner scheduling where they play each other? Because some of these teams that are go up for playoff games are going to be adding another tough game. I mean, you look at what Florida plays this year and what they played last year. They might be playing. Yeah. I mean, they could. There's not a team on that schedule that they can't lose to. Yeah.
Well, that's why I think that you had some coaches talking about it, and some coaches were like, wait a minute. Shane Beamer, my man said it perfectly. It's like, wait a minute. We play Clemson every year at the end of the season. So you want to tell me, you know, there could be a year where I got to go to Ann Arbor, you know, or Michigan comes to us? Like, hold up now. Like, I think that's pushing it. So I asked Sam Pittman for clarity yesterday. After Brian Kelly made his comments, and Sam Pittman kind of said it this way. He goes, if it would kind of be counted towards the nine game conference schedule. And I know that sounds a little bit complicated, so I asked Sam Pittman to go further in on it. And he said, look, if we agree to go to nine games in the SEC, well, if we do an SEC Big Ten quote unquote invitational is what I call it because of the basketball reference, that would actually go towards that nine. So maybe you're not playing an extra SEC team, but you're playing potentially a Big Ten school in that. So maybe that's where, you know, you get somewhere. I don't think, look, I talked to a number of ADs yesterday before they got on their private jets and got out of town as quick as possible. And they said, look, this thing, don't hold your breath. Like it's got a couple years for that to even get figured out. And I agree because you got to figure out what you're going to do with the conference and you got to figure out what you're going to do with the CFP. But don't forget, man, there's a number of teams you'd have to buy out because if you're looking at the schedule right now, everybody's got their schedules pretty much laid out for the next 6, 7, 8 years. So how that part, who's going to pay for the buyouts? You know, we just saw something with Tennessee and Nebraska, you know, where Nebraska wanted out and whatnot. Nebraska had to pay a fee. Then Tennessee figured out who they were going to play, whatever. What I'm getting at is that right now we're trying to figure out what the next 2 years looks like. Well, this SEC Big Ten thing, I mean, it wouldn't happen for like 5, 6, 7 years. So I think a lot of coaches, that was just one of the things that was brought up. And I think when Brian Kelly was asked that, again, that was like one of probably 7 topics that were discussed in the room. And obviously that's going to click and that's going to hit. And it's something interesting to talk about. But I do think that that's kind of down the road a bit. So I'm just saying, SEC fans, Big Ten fans, hold your horses. Don't expect some invitational in 2027.
Well, Trey,
you're already getting it, by the way, too. Like, kind of. I mean, you're getting Texas and Ohio State. What do we have? Yes, last year we had the Longhorns and Michigan. Like, whatever. I'm just using examples, but you're kind of already getting that. So, I mean, if you want to see Vanderbilt and Purdue play every year, have at it. So.
Trey,
no offense, because I love Diago. But I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, you're good. I saw you tweeted about the potential for SEC overseas games, and Greg Sankey basically said, no, at this point, it seems like it could be too challenging financially. But other conferences, right, they figured it out. So what could be the benefits of a game abroad if they did try to figure this out one day?
Yeah, I don't think that would be a big – like, I think it would be something because – If ESPN or somebody wanted it within the next like 3, 4 years, that's where the challenge is. But I think it would be fascinating. And talking with some folks, there's a reason why that was brought up. And we're talking about with the media to Greg Sankey. It's because it's something behind the doors that have been discussed. And I think that when you look at, and I'm not saying it went deep into discussions, but I am saying ESPN has come to the SEC and have been like, hey, you know, we do this, you know, once a year, maybe twice a year, whatever. Would you like to get involved? And I don't think it's that big a deal when it comes to putting it together because, guys, I mean, we see, what, Georgia Tech and Florida State go to Dublin. Well, you know, we had, what, 3 years notice on that? I mean, it's something the SEC could do. But, you know, would you expect Georgia and Tennessee or Georgia and Alabama to take a home game away from their schedule to go overseas? Okay, maybe once, but that's it, you know? And so I don't know if this is going to become some – it will become some yearly rotation where you play an SEC game over there, but I could see something where you start seeing an SEC team maybe play somebody else overseas. Now, that's where it could get interesting. And I've been told something that the four-letter network and Disney and all that stuff has presented to the SEC because they did do a big presentation, ESPN did, while we were down here. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like off the table, but I think Greg Sankey was more talking about, look, taking SEC network on the road, you know, logistically getting these teams over there and whatnot, having like an NSEC type game where you got two of those competitors over there, I think that's the long stretch. But it would not surprise me one bit if there's an SEC team playing overseas in the next 5, 6 years. I'll just leave it at that.
Finishing up with Trey Wallace, college sports reporter for Outkick. Trey, we got about 30 seconds left. Kirby Smart brought it up the other day. He was like, you know, we can talk about everything, NIL, you know, the house settlement, whatever, the transfer portal. Is there any power for the SEC to actually be able to make changes in the transfer portal, and when can we expect something like that?
Yeah, I don't disagree with Kirby Smart. I think it's a massive problem right now, and I think it also ties into the revenue part that's about to start happening come July 1st. I think that at the current moment in talking with some officials, it's not much the SEC can do. They can complain all they want about it, but until this house settlement is reached and then you get this new College Sports Commission, which is pretty much going to be the enforcement arm from the house settlement. The NCAA is losing some power when it comes to academics and eligibility, so they would have to be the ones to make the change to the transfer portal. It wouldn't just be like the rules committee from the NCAA anymore. I think within the next 2 years, you're going to see something with the transfer portal moved. I think they're going to either agree to put this bad boy for 10 days, you know, sometime in the middle of January and take away the April period. And if they don't decide to do that and keep it where they are, you're going to keep the same 2 portal periods open because you don't want one at the end of April
where you're just completely screwed going into the summer. So I don't disagree with Kirby Smart. I think it's a massive problem. These guys don't have their roster set. You got people leaving. And then also at the same time, as we saw twice this spring, Nico took a bunch of money and then left Tennessee, went to UCLA. Madden, his brother, turned around and took about $210,000 from Arkansas over a span of 3.5 months and went back to LA. So you got to figure out a way to stop this type of stuff, and especially with revenue sharing coming up. How do you put an end to that? Well, you got to start collective bargaining. I don't see that happening anytime soon. But at the end of the day, yes, we will see a different transfer portal, in my opinion, the next 2 to 3 years. We'll just see if Kirby Smart gets his way.
That's Trey Wallace from Outkick. Trey, we appreciate it, man. Good to catch up with you. Enjoy Destin.
My man, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate all of you guys. Look forward to seeing you at the next NASCAR race.
That's Trey Wallace from Outkick, man. Good stuff. And obviously the latest going on down in Destin. Some good info there with him.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.